Welcome back to Restless Viking Radio. If you've been here a while, thanks for waiting. We took the last couple weeks off between seasons, long enough to let the story settle and to miss showing up to a microphone. Season 1 ended with Chips and Cheese, that story where Pappens and I discovered that maybe there was something else circling us. It felt right to end there on shared ground, two perspectives with a kind of quiet handoff. Season 2 starts somewhere else entirely. There's no crossing, no arrival, no ceremony. Just a Saturday. This first story doesn't travel far. It just opens a door. This is a Saturday at Bahala. Bahala isn't home. It's an old pieced-together building on 3 acres that used to be the dismantling shop for a junkyard. It's more like 3 buildings that were pieced together with flashing and tar. The actual salvage yard was down the road where 80 acres of old cars and metal heaps pile up. It's about 30 minutes away from our home. Most days it runs itself. 16 cameras, robots come alive around 7 p.m. and clean the floors. Wax heaters come on in the morning and improve the smell. Another robot roams around like an archaic supervisor checking corners and anything weird. Lights come on and off. An automatic food and water dish for the shop cat, Heimdall. Heimdall's the full-time staff who takes rodent security seriously. My friends call it an automated outpost where I go to work on things and pretend I'm productive. Maybe a fortress of solitude. Saturday morning, I drove for another day of projects, a little real job work, and to be creative or something. But inevitably, I have to fix some things. As Poppins says, it's like NASA, Harbor Freight, and a junkyard had a baby. It was a cold snap all week. The weather app seemed to stop using adjectives and just showed numbers like a warning label. I looped around the circle driveway to check the back roof line to make sure that the heat cable was still keeping the ice dams from forming. The car slowed, spun tires, wiggled hard, and stopped. I backed up, plowed through the drift, and stopped again. I jumped out into a foot of snow, powder pouring into my untied boots. The automated heat cables were doing their job, melting small tunnels into the ice dam. I knocked the biggest icicles off the eave, hopped back in the car, and finished the loop, spinning and fishtailing the whole way around. I parked crooked in front of the huge garage doors. I arrived at the entry door, laptop slung over my shoulder, keys in hand. Heimdall was at the window. Big black fur, yellow eyes. He didn't move. He was just staring at me like a nightclub bouncer. Then he stood, rubbed his face in the window frame, and meowed silently behind the glass. I tapped the alarm off with my phone and turned the locks. The door opened, dropping a pile of drifted snow onto the old welcome mat. I turned to look at the weather station. Negative 29 degrees. That wasn't wind chill, not feels like, just a confident negative 29. I stood there for a second. "I think that's cold," I said. Inside, everything was still in quiet night mode, that hollow winter silence buildings get when no one's around. So I did the startup routine, flipped on about a dozen switches, lights first, then the thermostat, 55 to 68 degrees for the shop. I opened the double doors to the studio leading off the back of the main shop, kicked the heavy steel doorstop that was a leftover from a tractor repair. "Computer, studio on." A dozen lights clicked on. The monitors blinked awake, one by one. The little wall-mounted microcomputer came to life, its own small screen that read, "Higgins." Camera screen slowly brightened into existence, showing my fresh, wavy car tracks in the snow. Those feeds watched the shot from opposite angles like a low-budget big brother. Then the electric heater, then the propane heater. It's a whole sequence like NASA launch control if NASA ran on extension cords and hope. I took maybe 4 steps away, and the propane heater let out a howl. Not a rattle or a cough, a full civil defense siren. Like we were supposed to practice hiding under the desks. Heimdall didn't hesitate. He bolted out of the studio and disappeared in the old 1950 Dodge like the ship was sinking, which honestly felt fair. If the cat abandons the room, you should probably reconsider your life choices. The heater screamed so loud my heart did that little skip thing. I instinctively took a small step back. The primitive part of my brain immediately went, "Evacuate! This building is clearly about to explode." The more reasonable part went, "Eh." I turned around and scanned the 32 linear feet of desk space I could no longer explain. I set the laptop down on the cooling pad, added the power cord and the docking station cord. I sat back on the old leather chair and jumped. The cold leather immediately soaked through my pants. I winced. Then I watched the whole command center lighting up like we were tracking incoming weather phenomenon. There's also a drone project sitting there that hasn't successfully flown in about 6 months. It just lives there now, like a reminder. If the place had a mission patch, it would read, "Mostly operational." Behind me, the heater continued screaming like the Midwest was under attack and then slowly quieted into ticking sounds. If we were going to explode, I figured, I might as well finish setting up first. I finally sat down to do the thing I'd driven out here to do in the first place. Figure out the new audio mixing board and connect it to the computer system. The file opened. Text spilled onto the screen. The soundboard gave me an error. I opened the PDF with 68 pages of instructions. I tapped on the keyboard, narrowing my eyes. I sighed about every 4 pages, took a drink of the cold coffee, and forgot what I was looking for. I winced. How am I going to solve a problem the instruction manual doesn't even consider possible? I looked at the miniature wall computer I'd built to help with exactly this kind of problem. I leaned back in the chair and spoke like they do in Star Trek. Higgins. Hey, Chuck. Good morning. The speakers responded with a confident British accent. I need to connect a soundboard to a network. Can I do that? He thought for about half a second and then informed me, very politely, that I could write a Python script. That way I could add the launch path for the transfer program by keystroke, button, or voice command. Python? I just wanted to connect it by a network cable instead of a USB. Why the hell would I program something? But then he continued, we should slow this down a bit. I think it's important to consider opening a port to the soundboard first. I stared at the screen. That's what I just asked. Where the hell did the Python script come from? I said out loud to an empty room and a cat who did not care. Higgins replied with a, I understand your frustration. Unfortunately, I can only react directly to your questions. I can pull up some examples of others who have been successful in setting up your specific soundboard on a network and can integrate them with voice command. His digital British accent talked about something that had nothing to do with what I'd asked. I told him to shut up and tried to connect it to the network anyways. It didn't just not work. I just stared at the Ethernet cable and the USB port, wondering if it needs a capture card or something in between. I knew it was probably impossible, but I don't let that get in my way. About 10 minutes later, my knees started to ache. It wasn't a sharp pain, just the dull, creeping cold that seeps up from the concrete floors. It was reminding me where I missed some insulation. I foamed every wall in the reconstruction like I was sealing a submarine. The floor, still basically a refrigerated slab of 6-inch concrete. So now my knees felt like 2 forgotten hot dogs buried in a freezer for the past 2 years. I asked Higgins what he thought about building a tiny kerosene heater under my desk. This time I typed it onto his tiny terminal and didn't speak into the air. I didn't want anything big, just something tasteful. Something I could probably cobble together from parts already sitting in a drawer labeled wicks and lanterns. He responded instantly, his words pouring down the computer screen with what read like an OSHA training video. Carbon monoxide, ventilation, fire risk, insurance implications, words like inadvisable and catastrophic. It went on long enough that I half expected him to recommend a reflective safety vest. I got a little more miffed. Oh, for the love of, I groaned to an empty shop. I just want to build a mini heater, not a fireplace. I got ready to type a sharply worded response. But his voice recognition feature was still on. I hear your frustration. His calm, formal British accent broke the silence. I jumped. My goal is to keep you warm without creating fire or ventilation risk. Would you like suggestions for safer heating options? That's when the propane heater behind me let out a metallic clang like someone had just dropped a wrench inside of it. I froze. Higgins, I said. A clang just came from the heater. He actually laughed. No, seriously, it was loud. That could be normal thermal expansion, he said calmly. Metal components often contract and shift as they heat. It's usually harmless. Oh, so we'll probably be okay then, I said, emphasizing each word. I'd say likely, not probably, but yes, based on the information available, there's no immediate cause for concern. It was disappointingly unhelpful. Then he calmly explained thermal expansion like a newly graduated therapist trying to talk someone down from a ledge. At that point, I told him I was considering setting fire to the entire desk and starting over, out of spite. He began organizing what sounded like a safety-focused response, so I turned his voice off and then decided to work on something that didn't talk back. Electronics. I pushed back from the desk. I walked to the workshop side of the audio studio and stared at the small circuit board on the bench. What was I doing here? I spotted the post-it note in the soldering iron. Add MOSFET module to circuit for LED lamp. Oh yeah, I blurted out. A few minutes later, I had it on the bench. Connector in one hand, tweezers in the other, the module in a clamp. I was trying to hold 3 microscopic parts in place while reaching for the soldering iron that was approximately 6 inches too far away to grab without upsetting the entire arrangement. And this is the exact moment that Heimdall chose to help. He jumped onto the bench like a furry meteor. Hey, don't! Too late. He rubbed against my arm, purring like a chainsaw. I tried to keep everything steady. I lifted one elbow. Something wobbled. He thought this was affection and leaned harder. Then, just to seal it, he licked my finger with that sandpaper tongue. My hand twitched. The parts launched. One bounced off the clamp, one pinged on the soldering iron, the third just evaporated. They didn't fall, they vanished. Into that alternative universe where tiny screws live forever. I just stared at the empty bench. Heimdall blinked at me like we'd accomplished something together. I eyed him like a coworker who just said we after doing absolutely nothing for a project. Heimdall, no. He hopped down and, on the way, bumped a little stepladder with his tail. It tipped just enough to nudge a tray, sending a handful of fasteners skittering across the floor. Great work, I said. A half hour later, I gave up crawling around with a flashlight and a magnet. The clock over the tool shelf said 11:35. Behind me, the propane heater started making that tired sputtering sound. A few flickers, a couple hollow coughs, like an old lawnmower trying to start. Then nothing. Silence. Empty tank. Somehow it was almost noon and I had successfully completed nothing except arguing with a computer and losing a fight to a cat. I walked into the main shop. There's a shelf by the fridge where I keep a collection of odd bourbons and strange whiskeys people have given me over the years. Fancy labels, cork tops, bottles that imply you're supposed to sip thoughtfully and discuss oak notes. I stood there staring at them for a second and made a low prehistoric sound in my throat. Then I opened the fridge and grabbed a sandwich of uncertain age. The bread was cold enough to feel stiff. I didn't sit. I tore the bag open and took an inappropriately sized bite while standing like a raccoon. It felt about right. I turned the big TV on above the fridge. Some muted Hallmark show flickered to life. The heater ticked and cooled behind me. The robots were quiet. The whole place had settled into that midday lull where nothing seemed urgent anymore. The old leather couch sat beside me, slumped and permanently shaped like every bad decision I'd ever made. I looked at the old army wool blanket folded over the back. I've had it since I was 20. It smells faintly like canvas, dust, and something chemical they probably banned in the 70s. Still, the warmest thing I own. I grabbed a bottle of water from the fridge, so cold it hurt my teeth, and swallowed half of it as I loomed over the couch. Knees bent, eyes hazy, I chewed hard as I let a sigh out through my nose. I thought about the taste of the sandwich and spotted a speck of mold on one corner. I rolled my eyes, tossed it in the trash, and rolled onto the couch like I had just parachuted to the ground. I pulled the wool blanket over me, violently rearranged the pillow. I looked at the test tube clock I made with tiny blue readouts glowing inside of salvaged radio tubes like some Cold War lab experiment. 1-2-2-3-0-3. The seconds ticked up. And for a brief moment, I considered describing this as intentional rest or creating space for recovery, like one of those Moss Tea people on the internet. But really, I was just tired. The heater ticked. Somewhere a relay clicked. Heimdall jumped up, circled twice, and collapsed against my leg like a sandbag. The monitors hummed. The whole ridiculous, half-automated, mostly operational outpost kept quietly running around me, and I was asleep in about 30 seconds. Those Moss Tea people on Instagram would look at Bahala and see failure. Cables everywhere, projects half done, a drone that hasn't flown in 6 months sitting on a desk like a monument to optimism. They'd call it clutter, but I'd call it capacity. Because the one thing about a clean desk is, nothing's happening there. Nothing's being attempted. Nothing's failing interestingly. Nothing's 3 weeks away from maybe working. Bahala doesn't photograph well, but that's not what it's for. It's not a showroom. It's not an aesthetic. It's not designed to make anyone feel calm or inspired when they scroll past it. It's a place where things get tried. Where robots mostly work, where stories almost don't, where a cat can ruin your day and somehow that's part of the process. The minimalists talk about intentional living, as if intention only counts when it's visible, when it's been Marie Kondo'd into submission. But intention doesn't always look tidy. Sometimes it looks like spare parts and too many monitors and a heater that screams like we're under attack. Sometimes it looks like showing up on a Saturday when it's negative 29 degrees and nothing you planned actually gets finished. Because the work isn't always the thing you came to do. Sometimes the work is just being there. Keeping the place running, feeding the cat, losing the argument with a computer, and trying anyway. That's not clutter, that's capacity. The ability to start something, to fail at it, to try again Tuesday, to let ideas pile up while one of them turns into something. If I cleared this space out, really cleared it, the way they tell you to, I wouldn't have more space. I'd just have a clean room where nothing happens. And that's not the same thing as peace. That's just waiting. So yeah, I'll keep the mess. That was a Saturday at Bahala. This story opens season 2 because it's honest about where the work actually happens. Not in the big moments, not in the finished projects, not even in the stories that behave, but in places we keep running anyway. Where things mostly work, where nothing quite resolves, where showing up still counts. Next time we'll move again. Until then, take care of your outposts, even the messy ones.